The Daily Connect Podcast.
Welcome along to the Daily Connect Podcast. I'm Robert Kirkwood. It's Friday the 12th of October. And as it's Friday coming up, we'll have something for the weekend. Also, staying in the world of entertainment over the last couple of decades, Jay Forey, the world's only blind movie critic, has been entertaining audiences with his wisecracking reviews, and it's a welcome back to him. He's chatting with Simon Pawley. And in the news, sight loss could be set to double in the next 30 years. RNIB Connect Radio's Barry Snell caught up with Mike Dole from the National Eye Research Centre to find out why. But next, there's a new play about sight loss about to tread the boards. It's produced by sight loss campaigners Extant and is written by partially sighted playwright Amy Bethan Evans. Alan Russell has been finding out more.
It's time to take to the stage, and we have news on a new performance which is entitled Tinted. Well, to find out more, we have with us Amy Bethan Evans, who wrote the play. Amy, thank you for joining us.
Hiya, nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, you're becoming a bit of a regular, Amy, with all this writing and all these stage shows.
Well, I've done two in a year, which is quite rare, actually.
Okay.
I don't think it'll be a habit. I mean, it'd be lovely if it was.
So this one's called Tinted. Tell me a little bit more.
So Tinted is a monologue, and it's about a visually impaired woman called Laura who is reading the internet, basically, in the wake of the Me Too hashtag. And she's looking back at some of her ex-boyfriend's posts, and she's just kind of coming to conclusions about the prolonged childhood of growing up disabled. And she still lives with her parents, you know, and it's almost like the smothering love that can happen when you're disabled, but also, you know, the idea, the blurred line between, you know, helping a disabled person and violating their consent. Yeah, her going back through all the things in her life. And she's also a singer, and she sings between paragraphs. So, you know, it's not as heavy as I'm making it sound.
Okay. Now, you mentioned Me Too. So it's very topical there. When we've spoken and heard from you in the past, you've talked a lot about, you know, disabled characters, disabled actors and so on, hugely important in terms of diversity. But what's clicked when the Me Too was out and about? What's it said to you, I can do something about this?
I got an email from Theatre 503 to say that they were looking for short pieces for their rapid write response, which was called The Words Are Coming Now. And I wrote a 10-minute version of this piece about the blurred lines between consent and disability because, I am a visually impaired writer and I thought that's what I can bring to the movement. That was my primary thought, because if they were going to choose my piece, I needed to think of what only I could write. But also, I think that disability needs to be brought to the movement. I think it's really important to be intersectional. I think being a disabled woman is a completely different experience to being a non-disabled woman. And I think almost the idea of no grey area negates the disabled experience a little bit, because there are loads of grey areas in terms of what you should do for a disabled person and what you allow them to do themselves. And disabled people have their consent violated on a daily basis, and that's not right. But, you know, at the same time, it isn't just monsters that do it.
So it's almost accidental, I don't know, what do you say, invasions of space, or, you know, perhaps holding someone back.
I think that's a lot to do with it. Mm. It's assuming that people can't do things or can't make decisions for themselves, you know, and what would happen, but actually they might just be making that decision in a different way. And it's almost what happens in your development as an adult when all your key decisions are being made for you, you know, what that does to you, how that develops you as a person.
So these topics, if you like, I'm using the word compliment here quite carefully, the whole disability thing and Me Too, and it's almost about how people's lives are perceived they're going to be, or, you know, how outside influences can affect those lives as well.
I think so, and I think, you know, the peer pressure is a massive theme in the play, you know, and about the prolonged childhood that comes with growing up disabled. If, like me, you're a disabled person who went to a mainstream school, you are constantly looking at other people your age and thinking, why can't I do the same things they're doing? Why am I not doing those things? You know, your parents don't really want to tell you that you're different, you know, and it's a very fine line, because, you know, you are different and you need to do things differently, but that doesn't mean that you can't do them at all. It's the kind of message that you give your disabled child versus, because the parents are already always comparing themselves to each other and comparing their parenting strategies. Well, you know, what if your child has different needs to the other children, and you know, and you know, how other parents understand that.
So does the character look back at that and think, you know, have I, you know, fallen into that trap? Have my parents wrapped me up too much? Do I rely on people to make decisions for me for what I want to do?
I've tried to kind of distance myself from the piece because I think it's really important that it speaks for a lot of people. And I think if I get too into my own experiences, I want to make it accessible. And I've used my own experiences to illustrate it, because if you give specific examples, you know, then that's more relatable than giving vague examples. But at the same time, like, you know, I think it's very important to me that this is something that a lot of disabled people relate to, and it isn't just a therapy session for me.
Okay. And she's a singer as well.
She's a singer as well, yeah, and I can sing, but I'm not performing it. I do sing.
Okay, so the play itself, it'll be starting shortly. Tell us where and when.
It's on Thursday, the 18th of October, and it's at the Bloomsbury Theatre at 7:30.
So people can get more information from Bloomsbury Theatre.
It's part of the Bloomsbury Festival, so yeah, you can look at their website, you can look at the Bloomsbury Theatre, and you can also look at Extant, who are the company producing it.
Brilliant. Well, Amy, best of luck with the performance, and thank you for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Now, up next, our welcome return to Jay Forey. Over the last couple of decades, Jay, who's the world's only blind movie critic, has been entertaining audiences with his wise-cracking reviews. RNIB Connect Radio's Simon Polly caught up with the critic to hear how sight loss has changed his life.
It's sight loss charity RNIB's 150th anniversary, and we've been chatting to a whole range of blind and partially sighted people just to see how things have changed over the years and check in on their journey with sight loss. And I thought you might like to meet Jay Forey. He is over in the USA and is the world's only blind movie critic. Hey, Jay, how are you doing?
Hi, Simon. How are you doing? Simon, it's been a little while since we've talked, but it's great to hear your voice.
Yeah, Jay, I'm doing fine. Yeah, we miss you on the radio station. Jay used to do movie reviews for us every week, but you've kind of taken a bit easy on that now, haven't you?
Hey, Simon, I'm turning 60 this month. I'm going to take all the easy time I can get around here.
Take us back, Jay, because obviously being a blind movie critic is something really unique, but take us back all those years. You started losing your sight in your 20s, didn't you?
Exactly, yeah. I lost my sight when I was 27 years old from diabetes, and I think they say that's the number one cause of blindness, or at least it was. I don't know if it still is or not. So that's how I lost my sight. I've been a diabetic since I was a child. And the people from the Division of Blind Services came out and hooked, you know, hooked me up to all the social programs and stuff like that. They wondered, Jay, how come you're not depressed? You're not anger? You know, all that stuff you're supposed to go through. And I'm sure, Simon, you've talked to enough people, you know, through the range of emotions that people go through.
Well, there's usually that phase, isn't there, of why me? Then there's the anger, the frustration. And then the realization is that it is what it is. But you didn't go through that, though.
No, exactly. And here's why I you know, I mentioned to them why I think. A lot of people don't look ahead, I guess, in life. And, you know, you, as you're a sighted person, you get, you know, you're going ahead. And they're not looking at, are they friendly to people? Are they nice? Because, you know what, when everything's going fine in life, yeah, you may treat people a little differently than when you have a disability. You need help on some things. And when I lost my sight, I had friends, acquaintances come out of the woodwork to help me. And I feel it's, you know, I treated them right at the time. And when I needed help, you know, I got help. I've noticed some people with disabilities, they were not nice people necessarily. Then when they lost their sight, they were... They felt all alone, and some of it was stuff they brought on themselves. So I tried my faith, my wife, my family, and stuff. All that really helped. And I think it's on how you are as a person before you have that disability.
Now, you mentioned your wife there, Dorothy, and she's a teacher. Back in the day, when you met and you got married, you had full sight. How did that impact on your relationship, you and Dorothy?
When I met her, you know, I only had sight 4 or 5 years, then I lost my sight. So we weren't married long. And it was tough, but we actually, it wasn't too bad. It was probably, honestly, Simon, it may have been harder on her than me. Because here she is, going, you know, someone, she sees someone she loves going through something. And she really, I think, had it hard on me. And I think we see that a lot. The families and stuff, it goes throughout time. It's worse than the person with the disability themselves.
But it all went well, and your son Tim, he's grown up now, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's 35 years old, something. I'm probably wrong on that age, but yeah, he's in the Army. He's a major in the Army, so he's working at the Pentagon right now some of the time. So we're quite proud of him, and he helped so much. I'm a diabetic. He'd give me shots and do all kinds of stuff like that. So he was absolutely fantastic, and he was a great help too when he was around.
I've always known you to be a very optimistic person, Jay, and I don't think everybody in the world has that kind of disposition, because, you know, losing your sight and getting that news that you're going to lose your sight, and sometimes it's just sudden. It is a real shock to the system, isn't it? Because you might have had some plans for the future, and then you think, oh, what do I do now?
Believe it or not, Simon, I don't know if I told you, I worked on a steel crew. I was a foreman for a steel crew. Climbed up on those big metal buildings, you know, up 30, 40, 50, 100 feet high. I loved it, though. When you're blind, you can't get up there too quick. So, I loved the job. So, yeah, it was one of the hardest things the day I quit my job. And I'm not, you know, I was a tough guy, but I still remember crying out at my truck, putting my stuff up, knowing it was the last day. My sight had deteriorated so much where I was basically legally blind. And so it was really tough. But, yeah, attitude is everything, and that's one thing I've always spoke about. And that's just one thing you have to I think Chuck Swindoll is a great, great speaker and actress, and he says, life, 90% is attitude, only 10% chance. So that's how I go by that. That's how we have to go through in life.
And you had a great love of American muscle cars, didn't you, as well, that you had to change?
Exactly. Simon, you remember this story. Yep, I had a turbocharged Mustang. And I remember the doctor was trying to save my sight. And I go into the doctor one day, and I said, oh, man, I just got a ticket from passing this car on the turn, and the cop pulls me over. And the doctor, what? He goes, you're driving? He goes, you're legally blind. He took my license.
So I think that says a lot about Jay.
Exactly.
So becoming a movie critic, it's not something that you would assume that somebody with visual impairment would strive for. How did you become a movie critic?
Well, after I had been without a job for a couple of years, my counselor at the Division of Blind Services said, Jay, you know, would you like to go back to school, go to college, which I'd never been to college, finished high school. But so I decided to go back, went to a junior college. And while I was at the college, I had a good sense of humor. I always had a lot of fun. And someone said, hey, Jay, do you want to write something for the school newspaper? And I go, yeah, I'll be the movie critic. I was trying to be funny, quite honestly. And so I went to a movie, and I didn't went to movies still with my wife. Went to a movie, wrote funny things, and you knew some of my one-liners. You know, this movie was so bad, if I could have found a door to the theater, I would have left, and stuff like that. And it was the most popular thing in the paper. And when I graduated from college, other newspapers picked it up, then radio stations, television stations, and it just rolled on from there. And it just was been a lot of fun for 20 years.
I was always amazed at the detail that you could remember when you did the reviews, because you've got no visual reference of the film.
Now, are you making fun of my age here, Simon? I couldn't remember it? Or No, I know what you're saying. Yeah, I don't know. It is one thing I always tell, and almost everybody that has a visual, any trouble with their vision, understands this. For example, I was sitting in a room one time, and the air conditioning just clicked on, and I don't know if somebody was talking or something like that. And I leaned over and said, "Man, it's cold in here." The air conditioner just clicked on. It did. But see, I'm not distracted by what's going around in the room there, and you just hear other stuff. And I think that's why when I'm hearing stuff in the movies, it's stuff that other people wouldn't pick up because they're distracted by the pitch, what's going on in the picture. So I mean, that's not a bad thing. It's not a good thing. It just is what it is.
Now, do you ever find, because you sometimes, you make light of your blindness and you make some jokes, like you were saying, you would like to leave the theatre if you could find the door and stuff like that. Do you ever find that people actually, other people with a visual impairment, get a bit of offended at that?
Actually, Simon, every once in a while that does happen. But usually when they meet me, they're okay. This is actually kind of funny. I was doing a review in Baltimore, Maryland. I did them all over the states, the country, something like that. One of the major places in the United States where they do blindness stuff. One of the big divisions. But anyway, this is a private, I guess you want to call it, an organization. And if I'll think of the name in a minute, but anyway, they're stationed in Baltimore, Maryland, and somebody up there heard me with my jokes and emailed me and didn't appreciate it and stuff like that. And I emailed them back, and a couple emails, I kind of straightened out, and they kind of see, I was making fun of myself, not necessarily fun of other people, and they were okay with that. But you know what, you have to. That just happens, and I only did return emails from people in other states. I made a lot of friends over in the United Kingdom doing so many reviews over there. People email me, and I like to talk back. So, yeah, so you're correct. Sometimes there was some hurt feelings, but that happens in life all the time. You just do the best you can. And so, actually, and here's the funny thing. My wife sometimes, she was kind of my guardian. She edit my reviews. Maybe you better leave this out. I go, okay.
Do you think, though, sometimes we do get a little bit sensitive sometimes when we're living with, like, sight loss or another disability? Sometimes we just get too focused on it.
Possibly. I don't know, because it doesn't happen to me. So, yes, some people do, and there's a roundabout of all kinds of people, and some people are more sensitive than others. So, I did try to be careful for the sensitive people, and so I probably didn't go as far as what I would have liked to sometimes to be funny. But sometimes you go, hey, funny isn't always everything. Sometimes you got to look out for people's feelings, and I tried to also do that.
Of course, technology has come on leaps and bounds in the last few years, but we're talking about the last 150 years, of which you've seen quite a lot of them.
A lot of the last 150 years?
Yeah.
it feels like it that way, Simon. No, wow. It's just incredible. Just in that last, I've been blind for 30 years, and it's in this 30 years, leaps and bounds. I go, what did people do before they had all this technology, talking books, computers, talking computers? This is, I'm busy all the time. I'm always so busy, I work a part-time job at a doctor's office, call them attorneys and insurance, stuff like that. So I do that too. So you know what? There's no reason, if you're blind, disabled, or any kind of, you can't stay busy, learn things, do things. And I think that's one thing that keeps my attitude up. I'm always willing to learn something, try something new. I'm not the sharpest crayon in the box necessarily, but you try hard enough, and you'll learn.
Yeah, and the thing is, life is good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good, and you can make it good. Life is what you want to put into it. Yeah, things are tough sometimes, and we all have problems. But just do the best you can. And once again, like how we started, make friends before you have problems. So when you have problems, you have those friends that are built in and stuff like that. And then when you're you lose your sight, also don't key on your whatever blindness or disability. I have many friends. I've went out to this is kind of funny. I went out to dinner with or something like that without my wife, and we'd be sitting there, and they'll get up and leave, and I stand at the table, and they forget that I'm there. Oh, come running back after they're 5 feet away. Oh, I forget you're blind, and so you know what. Try to be a regular person, and the disability should be second. You know, I'm a person first.
Yeah, which is what RNIB's new slogan is and motto is, to see differently, see past the sight loss.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
See as people, exactly right.
Well, Jay, it's been a pleasure to chat with you again, and miss having our regular chats on the radio, but we keep in touch, and I'd just like to say all the best for you and Dorothy for the future, and of course Rally the dog.
Yep, Rally the our new little dog. Yeah, he's spoiled, and he's a year old. So he's full grown now, but he still acts like a puppy. So
and is Dorothy really, really found it hard when you lost your other little dogs? So is she bonded now with Rally?
Oh, yeah. You know what? And even took a while, you know, for the first 6 months, 8 months, she says, I'm still, I love him, but not like the last dog, But now I think she's past that. And so it was really tough on her. And I hear it's really tough on people that have seeing eye dogs have to go through that. And they're seeing eye dogs are just a secondary, their friend, their everything. So, I know that can be tough for people who have their seeing eye dogs.
Well, Jay, this will be the last time we speak, but for now, I'd just like to say thank you for taking the time and getting up so early in the morning just to give us a glimpse into the life of Jay and Dorothy Forey.
Well, Simon, I hope this isn't the last time we speak. I hope we still talk every once in a while, and we can still touch base sometimes. I still check out movies and do some stuff here and there, so maybe we'll touch base in the future sometime.
Take care, my friend.
Talk later, Simon. The Daily
Connect Podcast. Now, next up, sight loss could be set to double in the next 30 years. RNIB Connect Radio's Barry Snell caught up with Mike Daw from the National Eye Research Centre to find out why.
There are currently 2 million people living in the UK who have a significant degree of sight loss. Incredibly, that figure is set to double by the year 2050, and at the moment only 2% of publicly funded medical research is actually directed at eye disease. And here to tell us why is Mike Daw, who is Chief Executive of the National Eye Research Centre. So Mike, with all the advances we have today in technology and in medicine, why is this figure set to double by 2050?
We're set to double because the population in the UK is ageing, as I think many people are aware. So, and sight loss largely, not universally, but largely is a factor of growing older. And not only do we have this increase in size in the elderly population, particularly people aged over 65 and even more emphatically in the over 80 age group. So we've got this increased number of people in these age ranges, but we've also got the double whammy of more people suffering the likes of obesity and diabetes, which are themselves triggers for sight loss. So we've got an increased size in the elderly population, and that elderly population is more and more affected by sight loss triggers such as diabetes. So that's leading us to project that by the year 2050, this number of 2 million people will have doubled to 4 million.
Now, I believe the top five UK sight loss charities, Mike, are spending more than £500 million a year, but that money goes towards people who already have sight loss and it's spent on improving the quality of life. Should those charities be doing more at a fundraising stage into eye health research? Would that help fix the problem, Mike?
Well, those charities have to do what they want to do. And obviously, charities like RNIB do a splendid job of supporting people who suffer visual impairment, sight loss, eye disease, etc. But there is just isn't the money going into eye research. And I'd like to contrast that with the cancer model, where the biggest charity in the UK is a charity that exists purely to raise money for research that will stop people getting cancer in the future and will reduce the numbers of people having to live with the disease. There are smaller cancer charities that then support those people having to live with cancer. And both sides of the equation are obviously very important. But that situation just doesn't pertain in the vision world. As I say, the top five sight-term charities have this combined income of $500 million a year, but it's all spent on supporting people with sight loss. And it's left to some very small charities, and National Eye Research Centre is a very modestly sized charity, to invest in the research that would stop people going blind in the future. So my job really is to raise awareness of that and to say that of all the money that's spent on medical research, obviously we spend a huge amount of money on research, medical research in the UK, but less than 2% of that gets directed to eye disease. And really, for a problem which is so large, you know, 2 million people growing to 4 million people, for a problem that's so large, we really ought to be finding more than 2% of the total money available for investment into sight loss.
It sounds like we could have an epidemic in our hands. I mean, we're quite a small island in comparison to the rest of the world.
It's a public health disaster coming down the tracks at us, and, you know, we need to wake up and say, it's only through investment that we're going to head off this problem.
And the cancer model is definitely one that should be looked at.
Definitely.
Are people still losing their sight unnecessarily, Mike?
Oh, a lot of this sight loss is completely avoidable. A large part of that 2 million people is actually people, what the experts would call uncorrected refractive error, what you and I would call not having the right glasses or not having glasses at all. So we need to get to people. We need them to be in their opticians having their sight tested, and we need to have them wearing the right glasses. But my job goes well beyond that level of sight loss. There's that residual million or so which have pretty intractable eye diseases. We're talking about things like, your listeners will be very well aware of all of these diseases, but age-related macular degeneration affecting over 600,000 people in the UK currently, and with, you know, hundreds more people being diagnosed with it every week, and glaucoma. These are diseases which we can intervene with. We have some treatments, but no total cures. And with all the developments in medical research that are going on in other areas, gene therapy, stem cell research, immunotherapeutics, all these kinds of things, they're all showing great promise. We just need to push a bit harder, spend a bit more money to come up with treatments which not only curtail these diseases, but actually reverse their impact.
Now, Mike, we hear all the time how people don't go for eye tests. If anyone's listening to this interview and sitting up and taking notice, maybe for the first time, thinking about how they can prevent potential eye disease, what is the first step? Would it be an eye test?
The first step is very definitely an eye test. And we hear so many times, you must hear the same thing. People say, I don't need an eye test. My sight's perfectly good. The problem with that is that so many of these diseases are symptomless in the early stages, but unless they're caught at the early stage, intervention becomes ever more problematic and less likely to be effective. Glaucoma is often called the silent thief of sight, and it's called that for a very good reason. It's generally symptomless in the early stages.
Sneaks up on you.
Sneaks up on you. And by the time you're saying to yourself, oh, I really ought to get my eyes tested because something's not quite right here, you've already left it too late. So anybody, certainly from middle age, you know, from sort of 35, 40, if that's middle age these days, but certainly from around about that age, you should not be missing a biannual trip to the opticians.
And where can people find out more information?
For more information on the research that we do and how we fund it, just Google National Eye Research Centre or enter the term nerc-charity.org.uk.
Mike Daw, Chief Executive of the National Eye Research Centre, thank you very much for talking to us today on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks, Barry. The Daily Connect
Podcast. And now it's time for something for the weekend.
The Daily Connect. Same thing for the weekend.
What do we have this weekend, Andrew?
What a wonderful jingle as well. I do like a bit of Divine Comedy. Yes, plenty to talk about this weekend, so I'm going to try and cram it in as quickly as I can. First up is John Carpenter Live. I don't know if you're a fan of John Carpenter or not.
I am indeed.
So the director and composer John Carpenter is on a small series of UK shows at the moment. He's only doing four. He's already performed in London and Newcastle. This Friday he's going to be in the Barrowlands in Glasgow. Well, today, I should say. I know producer Chris is going to it. Tomorrow he'll be in the Albert Hall in Manchester. There's still tickets available, and there's still tickets for the meet and greet and the VIP as well. So yeah, if you wanted to meet John Carpenter, shake his hand, the man behind Halloween, The Fog, Escape from New York, They Live. If you ever wanted to meet and shake his hand and say, you're a wonderful man, then you can go along to those. So yeah, Barrowlands tonight, Albert Hall in Manchester tomorrow. Also gigs and concerts, if John Carpenter's not your thing, then you've also got Paul Young. Paul Young is celebrating 35 years of No Parley, his debut album. that's Friday in the Assembly Rooms in Edinburgh. Saturday he'll be in the O2 Academy in Glasgow. If you're in the if you're down in England, then you'll also need to make a note, because he'll be covering Aylesbury, Cheltenham, Southend, Basingstoke, and plenty more dates after that. So if you can stick around, we'll play a song from Paul Young once Something for the Weekend's finished. Fantastic album, No Parley.
Yeah, Love of the Common People, that's coming up soon. Wherever I Lay My Hat, could have been a contender to end the show.
Yeah, Come Back and Stay. It's a favourite of my mum's album, I think that is. Anyway, across to cinema, I'll do a quick mention to say that a couple of films that are coming out today. First Man, which is a movie based on the Apollo 11 mission to the moon in 1969. It's from the same director that did La La Land, mm-hmm. Damien Chazelle. So Ryan Gosling's in this one as well. Gosling will be playing Neil Armstrong. He's also going to be starring alongside Claire Foy, Jason Clarke and Kyle Chandler. First Man, which is out today.
We're going to have to put off the Halloween theme tune now.
Halloween themes, so.
Here's First Man.
Neil, if this flight is successful, you'll go down in history. What kind of thoughts do you have about that?
We're planning on the flight being successful.
The vehicle's not safe.
We need to fail down here so we don't fail up there.
This isn't just another trip, Neil. You're not just going to work.
Do you think you're coming back?
Do we know what that's based on? Is it based on any works at all?
If it's come from a book. You know, that's one thing I didn't see, if it'd come from a book.
The one book about that time has got to be The Right Stuff, because by the man who wrote Bonfire of the Vanities, I'll remember his name in a minute. If everyone could run in and tell me the name. She's in the studio going, it's
Tom Wolfe. Should we go with Tom Wolfe until someone corrects us? Apollo 13 was based on a book as well, wasn't it not? With Tom Cruise.
It was called Lost Moon. But The Right Stuff just puts you in the cockpit and tells you how dangerous it's going to be, because at the time these guys were going up, approximately 50% of the rockets had exploded, so it was a 50-50 chance whether they were going to make it, and they landed with, I think, under a second's worth of fuel to spare. So hopefully if this film gives over the tension of that, it'll be brilliant.
The trailer did. The theme running through the trailer was very much that rocket's big, how are you going to survive this? And his little kid, you heard at the end there saying, are you going to be coming home? So a lot of Apollo 13 themes running through it, where that was a disaster that they didn't know was going to happen, that happened mid-flight. And this is a case of they think it might not happen straight away. So Apollo 11, that's out today. Also out today, if moon and space adventure isn't your thing, it's a new work from Warner's Animation Group, which is Smallfoot, which is out today.
Welcome to the secret headquarters of the SES.
Stands for Smallfoot Exists, suckers!
We have searched the entire mountain trying to find one. And that day has finally arrived.
Smallfoot.
Oh my gosh! It's a Smallfoot!
Let's do this.
So the plot of this film is, it's a group of Yetis who come across a human, with each species thinking that the other was just a myth. So it's from the same group, Warner's Animation Group, the same people who were behind the Lego movie and the Lego Batman movie. It's not DreamWorks. We need to underline that. Now, DreamWorks do have a film in the pipeline, which is going to be called Abominable, which is out next year, I believe. So it's that same sort of thing where two films of the same theme coming out around about the same time. So yeah, this is starring Channing Tatum, James Corden, Common the rapper, LeBron James, Danny DeVito. So the big names are there. It's directed by Kerry Kirkpatrick, who also did Over the Hedge and has a long history in animated films as well. So that's out today. Probably one for the kids, that one.
You wait forever for a Yeti movie and two.
And then
come
two
along.
Coming on, yes.
Just very quickly, Tom Wolfe was correct, but First Man's based on a book by James Hansen.
There you go. Corrected on air, that's fantastic. Quick notes to mention that Venom is still out in cinemas, the Marvel film with Tom Hardy. Now, the critics are hating it, but it hasn't stopped the audiences actually going to see it, and they actually seem to like it. It's made $80 million so far. It's, I don't know, the critics, when I saw it first come out, there were a lot of twos and three stars. But yeah, apparently it's still popular for some people, so there we go. Fans of John Carpenter, keep an ear out for next week, because I'm sure when Chris is back doing something for the weekend, he will mention that the Halloween film is due to be coming out on October the 19th, so you'll probably hear something about it then. For all of the cinema listings that mention audio description, check your local listings.
Let's quickly do AD Theatre.
AD Theatre, if you're in York, head along to the Grand Opera House to see Dirty Dancing. On Saturday, the audio described time is at 3 p.m. Tickets and the touch door information is all available on the website. Similarly, if you're a fan of Bram Stoker's Dracula and you're in Nottingham, head along to the Theatre Royal this Saturday as well. The audio described and touch tours details are on the website as well. Finally, through this, the album releases. Jess Glynn, the new album from the English singer-songwriter, is up. It's a follow-up to her 2015 album, I Cry When I Laugh. This album is always in between. She's released two singles for it so far. Before I came on air, I was reading the Guardian review for it, and it wasn't that good. So, who knows?
Fantastic. Something for everyone for the weekend there.
The Daily Connect podcast.
That's all for this podcast this week. Now, if you're a fan of books and reading, why not check out the Read On podcast? You'll find it if you search for RNIB Talking Books. Right, that's a plug over. Hopefully Stephen will be back next week. See you soon.
The Daily Connect podcast.